Welcome to the Edinburgh Fringe. On today's show, Finross is travelling back in time with Caligari. Yes, it's good afternoon, good morning, good evening on what is for many the day off. It's the Monday, middle Monday of the Fringe. Traditionally, a lot of artists just go, you know what? Nope, I'm going to chill. Not all of them, though. There are still tickets, there are still shows, and of course, you could take a little breather and gather your thoughts for the rest of the week ahead, or the 2 weeks ahead. There's still a lot of Fringe to be going through, and we're just bringing you just a taster of it here on the podcast, as we have been doing since 2005. Well, at least I have. Finn's a new addition. And today, he's taking us back into the world of theatre, but back through time as well, to cinema as well, and looking back at the silent German film in the show Caligari. Yes, that Caligari. Yes, he's going to be speaking to the team from Chew Boy Productions, George Bailey and Hal Darling, about this silent film that has captured their attention, that 100 years after it was filmed and released, still feels relevant to the audiences today. There's music in there. There's a way of protecting the story's legacy. This is just a fantastically detailed and inventive production. There's parallels between post-war Weimar and the United Kingdom. It's a remake of a silent film on the Fringe stage. Let's find out more.
Finross Russell here, and I am joined by the brilliant Chew Boy Productions pair. I'm talking with George Bailey and Hal Darling. How are you two?
Yeah, good. Thank you, mate. Yeah.
How's being up in Edinburgh?
It's incredible. Yeah, we haven't been here for ages, so it's quite overwhelming.
Are you loving our fine summer weather?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
I brought my coat, which I'm glad about. So, yeah.
It was actually almost too hot in London, so it was nice to
It's nice to come up to Edinburgh and then never see the sun again for an entire month.
Yeah, it's nice. It gives you some perspective.
You know, with the Fringe, you're indoors the whole time. You're seeing shows. You don't even notice the weather.
No, exactly.
This is why this is a perfect place to hold this festival, because it's the only place where summer somehow manages to be this cold, chilly experience where you've got to bring loads of layers.
Yeah, exactly. We can be vampires for the month.
It's exactly. Great, you know what I mean? Is this a confession, guys?
Yeah. Yes. We haven't been outside for a long time.
Right, well, I guess we should get to the reason that you guys haven't been outside in a long time. Tell us about Caligari.
The show's adapted from a 1920s German horror film called The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, which is, it's just, I mean, I'd highly recommend watching it. It's only an hour and a half. The whole thing's on YouTube. I probably shouldn't say that publicly, but it is. It's all kind of in these like warped sets, and like it's all light through shadows, and like, it was the first example of a horror film, one of the earliest examples.
Yeah, definitely. First twist ending ever in cinema.
So we
Spoiler
alert, there you go. So we basically wanted to adapt it for the stage, and because it's a silent film, there was all these challenges to kind of have to like figure out exactly how we do that. So we thought, let's not do that, and we'll just put loads of active musicians on stage and
make the loudest
thing possible. Because the original film had a lot of music integrated into it, and we were like, you can, on the sets of the film, you can see all the brush strokes of like how they've created it and all this stuff. So we thought, if we put active musicians on stage to tell this story instead, then you can like see how the music is being created, how the world's being created. And it goes very meta and very surreal as well. Like, we kind of deviated quite a lot from the original text, but I think there's something in there for the original film fans as well, which is good.
Definitely, yeah. The core, so, I think the core message, like the political message that the film had, is still in the piece, where, because it was made in, was written in 1919 in Germany, which is quite a landscape for creativity, really. So, I think that's still there.
I think it's still there.
Well, this is what I was interested in asking about. I mean, we're talking about a film that was released over 100 years ago. You know, there's old films and then there's old films. What is it about this film that you think still resonates with audiences today?
I mean, there's loads in there. I mean, it was quite interesting, actually, because we hadn't watched it in quite a while, and then we came back to it when we first sort of actually wanted to action this project. And I think what we realized was, you know, so you're talking 1920s post-war Weimar Germany, and, you know, we're talking like there's a real distrust of authority figures and this kind of country that isn't willing to kind of like rise up against any form of like authority, because but can see that there are issues and problems. And immediately we were like, that sounds like someone we know. So I think it's, for us, it was about kind of like taking those parallels and seeing how we could kind of like explore them in a more hopefully nuanced way, and in a way that isn't just kind of like smacking the audience in the face with it. But there's also a lot of themes within the original film about like a class divide and this idea of, you know, who gets a say on who can do what, and how you can kind of like really push against that or maybe can't potentially. So I think those are all the political themes that then we're kind of digging into and trying to bring some relevance to it as well. And also because our version of it is told from the perspective of the victims of Caligari himself. But what was really interesting for us was an example we always came back to was this idea of Jack the Ripper, and the idea of like, you can always remember the name of Jack the Ripper, but I couldn't tell you any of the names of the victims. And it's that thing of who is allowed to tell their story in the face of this kind of authority figure who takes over it, basically. So yeah, I think that's answered it, but I have no idea where you fit into me. So we'll see.
Well, it's interesting because you mentioned that you have lent into the music side of it because you didn't want to just represent what the film is, because as you said, the film's on YouTube. People can go and see that if that's what they want to see. But I mean, it seems to me that there are still so many different ways that you could potentially represent that in an abstract way. You know, there's interpretive dance and super physical theatre, but you chose music and you chose to bring actor musicians in to be the performers of this piece. Mm. Why?
The film is so raw and you can see everything in it. You know, these sets are incredible, but you know they're painted. You know that they're wooden structures. And then with actor musicians, you see everything you see on stage, everything you hear on stage, sorry, you can see happening, and you see every guitar pluck and everything, and that creates this world which you know everything, every part of it.
I think the main thing for us was that we wanted to create this like separate language as well that like could almost tell a story by itself, because for us, like, the film, the music tells so much of that story. Like, we have these images in front of us, we have these visuals, but without that music, we don't have anything in terms of like the tension that builds within us, the stories and the characters and what their emotions are, basically. And I think for us, like, to be able to have that music in that live shared space and be able to tell a completely different story to what we're seeing in front of us and actually create a new dimension for that was something that was really interesting for us. And also, we researched a lot about other productions of Caligari, and they took that more kind of what you would expect route, and that whole thing of the silent nature of it and the physicalness and the grotesqueness. And there is quite a lot of elements within that as well, within the physical language of the play. But what we really wanted to do was actually say, okay, people are going to expect something of us. How can we subvert that and actually make it a slightly different experience for them? Because that's what we've always kind of tried to do with all of our projects so far. So yeah, hopefully it puts the audience on a bit of a back foot, but it's something that they can enjoy even more so, because it's not that alienating, you know, watching someone be a spider for 35 minutes on stage. So yeah, I think that's why we decided to go for it.
And also in the cinemas back in 1920, there would have been a live piano player live scoring, often improvising the score to the film. So we're sort of, it's almost a homage to that as well. You actually get to hear the music and see the film.
Let's talk about the Underbelly Untapped Award. You are coming up to the fringe, and this wonderful thing is stamped on all of the bits and pieces that you've done. Mm. But what actually is it, and how is it supporting your experiences coming to the fringe?
Oh, damn. It's been blessed, to be honest, to be part of it. I mean, it's been quite a snowball for us. Ooh. I mean, like, we applied when we just had the idea, and we've been speaking about the idea for years, as I mentioned, but, like, we had no idea that we would even get shortlisted for it. I mean, yeah, it was just this idea that we were really passionate about, and we were like, oh, hopefully someone sees something in it. And then before we knew it, we had like 2 weeks to put together a 10-minute showcase, and we were like, oh my god, like, we need to get on this and get actors and people who can play instruments. And And we were very grateful to, like, Rose Bruford, who helped us with, you know, rehearsal space and sourcing actors and this kind of stuff. And then we got it from there. So basically the award is in collaboration with New Diorama, Underbelly, Methuen, and Borkowski PR. And effectively, they all provide you with $5,000 in support, so financial support to bring the show up to Edinburgh. And also then free space at Underbelly for the month. Free previews at New Diorama, free PR support, all of this kind of stuff. Mm. So it's a really incredible award to be part of, but it has been quite whirlwindy for us, which has been great. I mean, we wouldn't have been able to do The Fringe without it.
No, it's just been all things go. We found out in April?
April, yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's not that much time.
No.
Announced in May.
Yeah.
And then from then, it's just really been... you know, go. But the list goes on from the support, really. You know, there's so many things that we can't say, you know, the posters, just everything. It's been a real lifeline to come up to The Fringe and have this support system.
Yeah. And I mean as well, because we don't really like have the privilege of money. Like we don't self-fund anything. Like if we want to fund anything, we have to either apply for that funding or... which, you know, everyone has to do. But because our stuff is quite niche, a lot of the time we miss out on that kind of funding, which means that then we have to then work to then get the money ourselves. So, like, we have our whole, like, filming side of the business, which then brings us in the money. But the problem is, like, we then have to... we are very much, like, advocates for, like, paying everyone out of that money correctly, like, however we do it. So the thing is, Fringe for us was never a thing, even on our brains. Like, we were, like... We've come up before, like, as punters and with youth theatres back in the day and stuff. But we've never been able to be like, we're going to bring a show up for the month and not worry about the implications of the money. Because, I mean, something like this could have, if we didn't plan it properly and hadn't have had that extra money and financial support, could have, like, bankrupted us.
Like, absolutely. Yeah, but like you say, like, we are funding everything ourselves.
Mm.
And we have to do the work to get that money in.
Yeah.
So we would have been absolutely overworked and it could have absolutely, ruined. Mm.
Ruined us. So luckily, we're all right.
But let's talk about the other side of that coin as well. I mean, I know both of you from our time at Chichester Festival Theatre together. This is a company that you two set up. You know, you guys, mates from childhood.
Mm.
How does it feel that this journey, the True Boy Productions journey, that started, you know, all the way back at you guys having an idea for a thing you want to start, has reached this incredible milestone of you guys at the Edinburgh Fringe, at Underbelly, with all of this support, getting to do your thing and showcase what you guys can do for a month?
It's mad. It's really mad, man.
When you put it like that, it's mad.
It's kind of freaky.
Listeners, I'm watching this moment of them realizing this suddenly dawn on them.
It's, I mean, it is literally that. I mean, like, we just started out because we got on, made each other laugh, and, like, I think as well, we found that, like, we liked a lot of just random stuff, like really surreal and weird stuff.
Mm.
And I'm glad that, like, we haven't lost that, like, nerdiness, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm so unapologetically a nerd about, like, anything weird. Mm.
And we're still making the work that we wanted to make, which sounds like, oh, why wouldn't you? But I think it can be easy to lose the way and do something that's more commercial or easily fundable, but we always go full in on each project, and we've never gone in on something that we didn't really want to make.
Yeah, and like, we never had the intention to be here, you know, like, or like do this or get this for, like, we always just set up with the intention of, like, I mean, what, we were like, how old were we, like 19, 20,
yeah,
19, something like that.
Yeah,
and it's that thing of, like, we never, like, set it up with the thing of, like, oh, in 4 years' time, we're going to go to the Edinburgh Fringe and win all these awards and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, what's been so important for us over the years is, like, just maintaining that thing of, like, why we set it up in the first place. Of just, like, we are mates. We want to work with, like, nice people.
Mm.
And we want to just create work that we think is interesting and kind of says something new, or, like, just, like, breaks down genre a bit and breaks down the stuff. So I think... I'm glad that we've maintained that, and I'm glad that it still feels like it was 4 years ago.
So. Brilliant. Where can people come and see the show?
So people can catch Caligari at Underbelly Cowgate in the Big Belly all month apart from the 15th at 6:30 p.m. And do give us a follow on everything. We are we're friendly people, I think.
We're kind. Kindness is key.
Kindness is key.
George Bailey, Hal Darling of Chew Boy Productions, which is the place to give all those follows and likes that we were just referencing, creators of Caligari, thank you for talking to us.
Thank you very much, Finn. Cheers.
And thanks also from myself to George Bailey and Hal Darling from Chew Boy Productions there, and also to Finn Ross for the interview and keeping an eye on half of the interviews that we're doing here for the Edinburgh Fringe Show over the podcast. With 2 weeks still to go, there's more from me, there's more from Finn Ross, and there's more from the streets of Edinburgh, as of course many of the acts will now recharge their batteries and will be completely fit and raring to go tomorrow right through until the end of the Fringe in 14 days' time. We shall see about that. What I do know is we've got podcasts right up until the end of the Fringe as well. So we will be bringing you more of the flavour from Edinburgh as we carry on, giving you some of the stories, the interviews and the people that make this festival as much fun as it is. I'm not on a day off. We've got the podcast, interviews and shows for me to see, and we'll bring you more of those over the next days and weeks here on the Edinburgh Fringe Show. So bye for now. Been listening to the Edinburgh Fringe Show, hosted by Ewan Spence and Finn Ross Russell, produced by The Podcast Corner. Listen to more from The Fringe at edinburghfringe.thepodcastcorner.com.